Welcome to the Last Round MMA.
The guy's never beaten me. In order to be the champion, you have to beat the champion.
A podcast for the MMA fan.
Imagine that. Look at everybody up here. They're all dressed like me. They're all trying to talk like me. They're all trying to be me.
Bringing you in-depth interviews and more from across the MMA world.
This is like pride. You know, everybody's here. I feel great. And, you know, I can't wait. Saturday night, I'm going to crush this guy hype.
Are you ready? Let's start the show.
Welcome to the Last Round MMA. And today we have the president of BYB Extreme, Mike Vasquez. Thanks for joining me, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Right. So the first question I always ask is, where did you grow up, Mike? And what are your earliest memories of combat sports?
I grew up here in Miami, Florida. I was born and raised. For me, really, Ali, Sugar Ray, Hearns, Hagler. But I think my earliest memories were Ali sitting on the sofa with my dad watching those fights. I used to watch a lot of wrestling. Florida was big in wrestling also. I argue with my dad how that it was real, and he would tell me it wasn't. I'd be like, but, whatnot. I guess I grew out of that one. But that was the heyday of boxing as far as I'm concerned. And everything after that has been so boring or pre-planned or controlled by promoters and promotions, to protect fighters. And I lost interest, when the UFC came around, I was jumped on that bandwagon, and I loved MMA. But over the years, it's gone down almost the same or similar path. For me, it was about getting back to the action, right? You never saw Ali run. You never saw Hagler, Hearns, anything. They weren't afraid to risk getting knocked out in order to get the knockout, right? They weren't boxing for rounds, which is what the sport has turned into. And when I met Dada and I saw what he was doing in the backyard, I was like, this got my attention. This is gritty. This is action. This is no holds barred. These guys are not fighting to win rounds. They're fighting to knock the other guy out. And I loved it. What we needed to do was, I saw it literally as a diamond in the rough. We just needed to, polish it and heat it up to get it to be legal, to get it to be sanctioned. And that's exactly what we've done.
So before BYB, you were actually in NASCAR. So how did that come around?
I was in Mexico working on. That came after. In 1998, I had a friend of mine who was very good friends with Juan Montoya. And Juan Montoya was coming from Colombia. He was really an unknown in the States for the regular average fan. But he was assigned by Chip Ganassi. He had done very well in Formula racing in Mexico, Formula 3, Formula 2 in Colombia and South America. But he was an unknown over here. So my friend wanted to introduce me. He knew my background was marketing and international business. And Juan was new to Miami, didn't know anybody or anybody in the PR or that side. So he asked me just to meet with Juan to see if we got along and if there was any way we could work together, help each other out or whatnot. So I did. I met with Juan very early in his career before he started at Chip Ganassi Racing. And we got along very well. He invited me to travel to every race throughout the season with him. And I did. And he actually won the championship that year in his rookie year. But what I noticed traveling around the country with him, no matter how many races he won and all that, you'd go into a Walmart, you'd go into a 7-Eleven, you go anywhere, and people didn't care in the United States about open wheel racing. It was all NASCAR. Mm. And as a kid, my experience with NASCAR was I'd watch it, but, when the ticker comes around with the score of the leaders, as a young Hispanic kid in the States, I was hoping to see, Rodriguez, Gonzalez, or, somebody that I could assimilate, more towards, and it never happened. The thought came in, said, what if NASCAR, who had been growing for many years, but kind of plateaued in those late 90s, early 2000s, what if, and they were actually trying to go to Japan to do races, or did one actually in Japan, but in Japan, they heavily tax American cars. Oh. So I went and I arranged an appointment with Mike Helton, who was the CEO of NASCAR at that time. And I asked him, why are you going to Japan so far away when you have 100 million Mexicans living south of the border, 30 million living in this side of the border? They all drive Fords, Chevys. We have Ford and Chevy plants in Mexico, and they love trucks. Why don't we start a series down there, and, you know, you actually can pull drivers? So they liked the idea, and they wanted me to kind of spearhead it. So that's what I did. I started working with my partner at the time, Carlos Contreras, which was a Mexican driver, and his brother. And we created what is now NASCAR Mexico. But we took it from the infancy, improving it year by year until 2004. At the end of the 2004 season, NASCAR came to us and extended the license to officially call it NASCAR Mexico. And literally within 2 years, it was the most popular form of motorsports in South America, in Mexico and South America. So that's how that came to be, you know. But I actually, at the same time, I was working in the United States and I had a team here. And I worked in partnership with a gentleman named Armando Fitz and Terry Bradshaw, the quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And so we did racing on both sides of the border. We were the first team to... American team to start a team down there. And we were the first team to have a Hispanic driver win races in the United States. So we used that series as a stepping stone as to train young Mexican and Hispanic South American drivers to, at that time, they were only familiar with open wheel racing and road courses. So we got them familiar. We actually worked with the Mexican cities and governments to build oval races, oval tracks down there. And we created that breeder system. And today you'll see one of the gentlemen, one of the young kids at the time. I remember he was 13, 14 when I met him, Daniel Suarez, who's in the Cup Series. You know, he was one of the young guys that went through that program as well. So it worked. You know, we started it. It came up and the drivers are now reaching the upper echelons of NASCAR racing.
So how did you manage, Mike, to change people's opinions so quickly?
Well, it's what happened in the United States. People love action, right? That's they love action. And in open wheel racing, it is beautiful, but there's a lot of finesse and there's not a lot of passing. The passing is strategic. The passing happens a lot in strategy more than, you know, and the old term rubbing is racing, you know, eight wheels are better than four, you know, when you're going around the racetrack and exchanging paint. When Mexican crowds saw that for the first time, you know, in their backyard. And not only did they see it, but they saw drivers that they were familiar with from different racing series competing together in that kind of racing. It really caught on very well. And we had sponsors like Telcel, Telmex, owned by Carlos Slim. They were the lead sponsors for us for the series. All the big companies in Mexico, Canals, which is like the equivalent of Wrigley's chewing gum or something like that over there. All the big companies got on board and supported the project, and new tracks were built throughout Mexico. Aguascalientes, Querétaro, those are all new racetracks. Tuxtla, down in the southern Mexico, and the sport has grown. And I did that for about 15 years, but I had to travel every 2 weeks for a race and, you know, spend a week down there. So I was there for a week, here for a week and a half, there for a week. And, you know, my kids grew and were growing. And eventually I said, you know what, I've had enough for a while. So I actually sold my equipment to a good friend of mine down there as far as my race team, and came to the United States, did a couple more years of racing here in the United States where the travel wasn't as bad or as difficult, you know. And then I got out of it altogether in 2014-15, just as I was meeting Dota 5000. So I literally, you know, turn my attention from NASCAR to BYB.
Someone that was advertised on your vehicles is someone who's very pivotal, I guess, in this whole story, Pitbull.
Yeah, absolutely. The reason I met Dada is my partner, Jose Suris, worked with Pitbull. He was part of Team Pitbull for many years. He was part of their branding and very good friends with Pit. And I met Pit years ago before he became Mr. Worldwide. As he was becoming Mr. 305, I met him and we got along very well. And you know, a year would pass and we'd run into each other again and we'd click, and then, you know, things happen. And then another 6 months would pass, we'd meet. And, it was funny because one day I'm in Mexico. I missed my flight because we had a little bit too much celebration the night before. And the airlines changed me. I was supposed to fly from Guadalajara to Dallas and then come to Miami. And I missed my flight. So they rerouted me through Mexico City. And when I'm in Mexico City, you know, a little hungover, not feeling great, I'm sitting there in the terminal just licking my wounds. And I look right across from me. I'm like, damn, that looks like, you know, his name is Armando. Looks like Armando. I can't. What's he doing here by himself in you know, Mexico City? I'm still drunk from last night, you know, whatever. But sure enough, a couple stewardesses came over and they started talking to him and he got up. They took a picture. And that's when I looked at him. I said, Armando. And he looked at me and he said, hey, what's going on? What are you doing here? You know, and that was in 2006. And instantly, hey, listen, we run into each other all the time. Like, give me your number. Get my number. And we just started hanging out more and more. And in the process, I met Jose Suric, and he became familiar with what we did because, you know, every time Pitbull would have a new album released, we would basically cover our car with that as a album cover and announce the album and whatnot. So in one of those times, Jose asked me if I'd be interested in looking at something, you know, regarding Dada 5000. And I did. And again, I loved it. And my only thing was, hey, if we're doing business, I need to know the person. It's business, but you still have to have a good relationship. I said, I need to meet Dada. I need to see what he's all about. And we set up a like an afternoon meeting here in Coconut Grove and probably spent 4 or 5 hours that afternoon together. Had a great time. Got to know him very well. Salt of the earth guy. Really. I mean, you see the movie Dogfight, you're like, you know, oh, Jesus, this guy's, you know, he's an animal. You meet him in person, he's a big teddy bear. I mean, you know, now you don't want to piss him off. But, you know, other than that, he's a straight shooter, good guy. That night, and I kicked myself because I wish I still had it. I didn't see the reason. I don't know. I wish I still had it. But we drew our logo that night on a napkin at the restaurant. We drew our logo. We designed our ring. We went really deep in that first meeting, and we got hit the ground running. We actually designed our ring, had a company do the graphics for it, and we patented the ring and the cage design that we used first, trademarked all our logos, got everything done, and then we announced our first show, you know. So then, of course, as soon as that show happened, Bellator got in contact with us that they were interested in potentially, maybe possibly, offering Dada an opportunity to fight Kimbo Slice at an upcoming show. And then we put that event together immediately thereafter.
So, Mike, had you heard of Dada before?
I'd seen the backyard fights. I knew of the backyard, and I had seen some of the fights. I was familiar with Kimbo. I was familiar with Dada. I was familiar with Jorge Masvidal. Who's the other one? Bruce Leroy. Some of the guys that came out of the backyard that ended up in the UFC. So I was familiar with it. I wasn't, you know, I never met Dodd. I didn't know much about him, but he was, you know, always in the picture one way or another. Because before starting his own fights, he was Kimbo's bodyguard, you know, and we're friends for many years like that.
And what is it you look for in a business partner? Because you were saying, obviously, you have to go for dinner, you have to meet them. Like, what is it? What characteristics do you look for?
Well, in any partnership, it's like a marriage, right? It really is like a marriage. You're tied to the hip. You can't let anybody put any air between you. And in every relationship, there will be people trying to put air between you to try to benefit themselves, to try to work themselves into the machinery or whatever. So that can be in a personal relationship or a business relationship. And it does happen. And in the partnerships that I've had, I mean, I've had, you know, a business with my family, no air between us at all. In my cigarette business, my partner now for almost 15 years, that was the first thing we discussed. We said, you know, there can be no air between us. There can be only honesty, only complete truth. And we tackle things together. We make those decisions together and whatnot. And we have, and we've been able to run a successful company, you know, over the last few years. And that's the same thing with Dada. You know, there's always people that are whispering in my ear or whispering in his ear. Not so much anymore, but at the beginning, they were trying to either wedge to pull me away from Dada to do something else, to put something in Dada's ear to pull him away to do something else. And we've always maintained an open, honest relationship and discussed everything. So, if anybody ever comes to tell me something about my partner, well, my partner's going to know about it, because that's the way it has to be.
So that night you designed the Trigon?
Yes, sir. We decided, we knew we had a different property. We had something that was exciting. It was, like I said, a diamond in the rough. We just had it purified. And Dada had done various designs in the backyard, from a regular boxing ring to a kind of a triangle, but it was like an arrowhead. It was really deep on one side and, too pointy. And I said, I really like, the format, what the UFC has done, that they patented their octagon, and it's their property, right? And they named it the Octagon, and there you go. Bellator has to fight in something else. Everybody has to fight in something else. Mm. So I said, well, boxing is, it's been the same thing, and one of the things that I wanted to do is bring action. Again, since these cell phones have been invented, our attention span has been reduced, right? Because we get a message, we get this, we're on something, we get a notification, we're off that, we're on here before you know it, you forgot what you were doing over here. So as a young guy, our fights went 15 rounds, championship fights. When I was watching them on TV, they were, 15 rounds. Somehow I was up for all 15 rounds. I was focused in on the 15 rounds. There was no distractions, because back then we had 3 TV channels, no cell phones or anything to distract you. But nowadays, I'd buy one of these Mayweather fights, and I swear to you, I'd fall asleep in the 4th round, or I'd be on my phone and forget I was watching, or I'd change the channel for a second between rounds and start watching something else. And, oh, gee. So that was one of the things that we wanted to do, was make sure there was action. And the triangle design, what I loved about it was it forces the action. It pushes the action to the middle of the ring, right? Very few guys like to play in those corners. I've seen a couple guys back into the corner and try to tempt the other guy to come in. But most of the action happens in the middle of the ring. The fighters go toe-to-toe, and 90% of our fights as a result end in knockouts.
The smallest in combat sports?
Yes, sir. If you do, if you go on the internet and you do a triangle surface area, it's 21 from buckle to buckle, but once you remove the pads, it's about 20 feet. Or once you put the pads on, I'm sorry. That's about 172-175 square feet, something like that. Whereas, traditional boxing rings are well over 220, 240, even more. And some of the other rings, the round rings or the octagons or whatever, are up over 350, literally twice the size of our ring. So
any other names that you were going to go with potentially before Trigon?
That was actually, we did a fan vote. We didn't pick the Trigon. We did a fan vote at our first show. And I forgot what the other options were, but we had like 4 options. And then we had a write-in option. We had recommendations. We put the top 3 votes of our options. We put it back out there with some of the key recommendations that we liked. And Trigon's took the lead. We kind of liked it. So we went with it.
What did, close friends and family say when you came home from a meeting that night? And you said, I'm going to get into professional backyard brawling with Dada 5000 from the TV.
Yeah, about the same thing when they told him I was getting in NASCAR. Like, what? Where did that come from? But my family knows me. I work hard and I like to enjoy myself as well. And I like to do, I have my main business, and these two have been, I hate to say hobby business, right? But they're fun businesses, right? My other work, I go, I grind it out. I work, I put my hours in, I get the job done. I enjoy the NASCAR, the camaraderie with my team, with my drivers, with the other teams, the competition aspect, which I get in the cigarette company as well. Believe me, there's a lot of competition. We have the camaraderie with our team, our sales guys, our warehouse, get along very well. And I like to say that I try to build a team where people will run through a brick wall for each other, you know, not for me, but for each other. And that's what we've done in NASCAR. And I think that's the kind of team we have in BYB.
And is that just from recruiting well, Mike? You have to get a certain characteristic of people, of person, sorry?
Sure. That and, you know, the old treat others as you'd like to be treated, right? I treat everybody the same. You know, I don't care if you're the vice president or the newest guy in the warehouse, you know, and we could sit down at the kitchen, at the lunch table and chit chat about sports, family, friends, whatever. I like to mentor, you know, young guys and mostly guys, you know, but young guys that come to me that ask, you know, I never give my opinion on anything, but if somebody asks me, I give them my best advice. If I know something, I'll share it. If I don't know, I'll say, hey, you know, that's something I may not be able to help you with, but I enjoy that. I've had over the years, you know, mentors myself that I've been able to learn from, and I believe in passing it on.
So you and Dad meet that night, your handshake agreement, the logo's ready, the trigon's ready. Just kind of walk us down the path, Mike, because from then to actually getting the first fight, because I'm sure there was plenty of walls and plenty of obstacles to do with the commission, the rules, medicals.
Absolutely. We immediately started working knowing the laws, right? And knowing that the commissions were not too keen on starting with bare knuckle. I started working on the two platforms that were available, right, where we knew we could do bare knuckle fights, which was on native reservations or on international waters. So actually I did a contract with a cruise company, Resorts World Bimini, here out of Fort Lauderdale. And actually it was out of Miami, Port of Miami here. And we rented the ship and we were going to have a fight. Literally everything was ready, the crane, everything on the deck of the ship in international waters on the way to Bimini. Like normally that route takes them 2.5 hours, about 3 hours. They agreed to slow the cruise a little bit. So it took 4 hours just to make sure we were in international waters when we started and international waters when we finished our event. And that show was, we were ready to leave on a Wednesday. And because we were going to be international waters, we weren't going to air the fight until Friday because we needed to get to Bimini, edit the fight, then upload it, which, you know, now technology is a lot faster, but you go back 5 years and it's almost ancient what we were doing, or 2015, go back 7 years, it's almost ancient. So we needed to work on a Thursday, upload it, and then broadcast it on Friday. The day before the cruise was set to take off, I get a cease and desist letter from a gentleman affiliated with another organization, loosely affiliated, you know, basically a patsy, saying that he had the rights to fight on a ship. And he sent us a cease and desist letter. Yeah, that's exactly what I said. I mean, I was like, what are you talking about? Nobody has a right to fight on a ship or in a casino or on the beach or on a mountain or you're stupid. Get it? You know, here's our patents, our trademarks, buzz off. But the gentleman also sent, and I say gentleman loosely, sent the same cease and desist notice to the cruise ship company, whose attorneys were already a little skittish about allowing us to have a bare knuckle fight on their cruise line. So they canceled the cruise the night before our event. And I had production, I had all the fighters, I had everything ready to go. I literally scrambled overnight, and we made the event happen. Anyways, not on a cruise ship, made the event happen. We still had all the protocol. We had ambulances. We had doctors. We did everything the sanctioned event would have, except for the actual commission that was there. Because they weren't going to, and it was too deep, and I was committed. And you know, when somebody tries to screw you over, I kind of double down instead of back off. So we had our show anyways, and you know, it went well. It was a good show. It's on our YouTube channel. It's called BYB Battleship because it was supposed to be on a ship. But it was actually a good show. Now, that was the first evolution from the backyard into a triangle cage. One round, but it was 10 minutes. So I think we did have one fight, I think, go the full 10 minutes. But all the other ones, of course, they ended in knockouts well before. So that was the first evolution. And then Dada fought with Kimbo. Of course, that fight, you know, Dada literally died in the mat after the fight and was fortunate to recover from that, fully recover. But I put everything on hold until Dada recovered. I didn't want to do anything further. My primary focus really wasn't to help myself. It was, I believed in Dada as a person. I believed in what he was doing. I wanted to be part of the process. And I think I thought I had what it took to help him get there. And I wanted to enjoy the ride as well. So when Dada went to the hospital, until Dada was recovered, fully. And in 2018, at the end of 2018, he was strong as an ox, better shape than he was before the fight with Kimbo. And at the same time, Wyoming had just approved bare knuckle fighting. We just cranked her up again.
So how hard was it early on to find the talent for the shows because bare knuckle was so new?
Yeah, they came more out of MMA than boxing because, you know, the boxers were more concerned with their hands, injuring their hands. So it was difficult to find guys at a high skill level. We did find guys like Lorenzo Hunt. His first fight, bare knuckle, was with us. He's champion of another category right now, another division or another series. But his first fight was with us. We had Josh Dempsey fight with us, who's, you know, Jack Dempsey's, you know, grandson, great grandson. We had some good names on that card. Jomi Escoboza, who was our champion, he fought on that card. So we had some good guys. Renee White Boy Rodriguez. We had some good fighters, some good bare knuckle guys, and some new young prospects. But we didn't have any really names, you know, established names from boxing or MMA. And that's come with time by them seeing that we're giving opportunities to fighters that they're not getting in MMA or boxing because it's very political. They're still padding fighters' records. That's one of the things we tell our fighters here, and I love it when they say they don't care, bring it. They just say, bring it. I want the best. I love it. So we tell them, listen, we're not going to baby you guys. You know, we're not going to don't come here and tell me you want to choose your opponent or you have an opponent in mind. You know, we want 50-50 fights, you know, and it'll be very rare to see an undefeated bare knuckle. Yeah, maybe 3-0, 4-0, 5-0. I think Sam Liera's 5-0, you know, which is remarkable because he's been in wars, you know, before. But, you know, there's no shame in being, you know, 6-4 in bare knuckle boxing, you know, or anything like that. But if you're 6-4 in regular boxing, you're done. I mean, nobody's going to put you on their card unless you're a last minute fill in or you're being brought in to fight somebody that's 16-0 and you're the patsy for that event. So if you see, again, I'm not going to mention names, but if some of these boxing promotions, you go down red corner or blue corner and you can bet the house on a certain corner, right? Whether it's blue for one promotion or whether it's red on another one. You can bet the house because that's their favorite fighter, and literally after every event, I circle my card, and it's 6-4, you know, 7-3, 5-5. It's a 50-50. They're 50-50. I credit our matchmaker Mel Valenzuela for that. He's a Mexican. He likes to see fights. He's not gonna, you know, put anything out there that's not worthy of being seen by avid, you know, combat sports fans. And I think if you look at our fights, it's another thing we don't do. We don't do prelims. I think just the name prelims is insulting to the fighters. You know, we have a card, we have a fight card. And many times the first fight of the night, the first fight is the fight of the night. because we do like to start with a banger. We like to get that momentum going right away, get the energy level up, and it stays up throughout the night. Whether if you start with two or three boring fights, you lose your crowd. The crowd knows the first three fights are going to be terrible, so they're going to show up late, you know, and whatnot. So, no, we like to pack the card with exciting fights, and we start the night off. I think this next fight we have next weekend is J.D. Burns against Alan Arsenio. If I'm not mistaken, that's the first fight of the night. And they've both been in fights of the night because they're both warriors. They're going to go, they go down, they get right back up and not only get up, but get up and move forward. So it's going to be an exciting card.
We had Mel on last week, and he was saying, you know, BYB, there is no A side, B side.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. That's what it's all about. We want fans to enjoy every fight, not to say, I'm going to start wide. It starts at 8, I'll tune in at 9, because that's when the real fights start. You know, it starts at 8, it starts at 8. You know, it really does start at 8. And that's another thing. Our commentators, you know, Mike Goldberg, Paulie Malignaggi, Claudio Trejos, Benny Ricardo, Dave Ryan, same thing with them. I pulled them aside when we first started and said, especially Paulie, I said, I want you to be you 100%. Not that he wouldn't be himself, but, you know, it's a new relationship. So I said, I don't like yes men. I don't like patsies. If you see somebody that's doing something wrong, call it out. You know, you don't need to say that it's a great fight. If it sucks, say that it sucks. If the guy's not doing footwork, if he's making mistakes, if he's doing, I want the fans to know what you're thinking. Honestly, I don't want you to try to pad the results. Now, obviously be respectful to the fighters. We don't want to call somebody out, you know, in a negative way, but point out what you see. And, you know, he loved it. He's like, you know, great. Because, you know, Mike Goldberg, same thing. He's all action, Claudia. So I think that, and they genuinely, which is rare, because I've seen a lot of broadcast teams that they don't like each other. You know, when the light turns on, they're all smiles. But as soon as the light turns off, microphones down, they turn their backs to each other and they walk away. These guys genuinely like each other. You know, we're hanging out before the fights. As soon as the fight's over, you know, we got cocktails ready. We're hanging out after. We're talking about each individual fight. We're laughing. You know, so they genuinely like being around each other. And like I said, we've built a team. And that's what I think I'm most proud of.
And you decided on those, Mike, just from your experiences watching, you know, boxing and other sports before?
Yeah, I mean, you're a fan too, right? Regardless what sport it is. If you know, like unfortunately a Miami Dolphins fan. I've been born a Miami Dolphins fan, and I love the Dolphins, but geez, we've really stunk it up over the years. And there's nothing worse than having an announcer tell you how great the team is when you're seeing it that they're not great. You know that the coach made a great decision there, even though it didn't work out for him. No, it wasn't a good decision. It was a stupid decision, and it didn't work out because it was a stupid. So that kind of stuff annoys me as a fan, and I didn't want that to happen. I wanted the people at home to feel like they were that third person at the table, or the you know, just sitting around the table with the announcers, maybe not speaking to them, but, you know, participating there. And that's the feeling that we wanted to get, you know, through to the people. And when I see the comments and the emails that I get, you know, after the shows, you know, there's always going to be a hater, you know, sometimes tied to another promotion or something like that. But the vast majority of the comments are, you know, how great the broadcast team is, how much they love Paulie's, you know, comments, how they like Mike's experience and how he can throw back to experiences and tie stuff together, you know, and we have several UFC fighters, former UFC fighters that are on that he has had personal relationships with and knows, and he can go, you know, back into those and whatnot. So it's, you know, it's a great team.
You're not doing something right unless you have haters, right, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, it's always going to happen. Actually, this fight, for the first time, and it's something that I've been wanting to do for a while, our first event, I had two broadcast teams, English and Spanish. But then as we started growing, I wanted to focus on the English, just focus on the product and not so much on the multi, you know, language. But this show, we're starting back to where we did. So Mike and Paulie will be ringside English. Claudia and Benny are going to be ringside Spanish. And it'll be we're moving forward in that direction so we can satisfy some of the customers or some of the fan bases and networks that we're talking to right now that that want to expand our broadcast. So
before I forget this question, will you revisit the cruise ship idea? Because I'm sure you kind of want to get it ticked off since you got stopped the first time.
I've had some conversations. It's something that I'd like to do. It might not be this year or next year. You know, it might be down the line. Right now, we're focused on continuing to expand states. We just got South Carolina legal last year, at end of last year, compliant, I should say, with Bare Knuckle. We had our event there in December, in December of this past year. We just announced yesterday we've been working with the Dubai and the Emirates Boxing Commission. And we got a permit to do bare knuckle, the first bare knuckle fight in the Emirates. So we'll be doing an event there. We just announced it yesterday, as a matter of fact, on March 18th. We're working with several other states to get compliant as well. We have another little project that we're going to be announcing soon also that's going to expand our reach even further. So it's in the back of my mind, you know, like Fight Island and all that stuff that they do. But for now, we just want to continue to expand the locations where we can do events.
So in the first show, you kind of said that you did like one long 10-minute round. How did you finally, you know, decide to shorten it? And how did you go to the 5 to 7?
Well, the boxing commissions, once they started looking at us to become legal, make bare knuckle legal, they were trying to push us towards 2-minute rounds. And our whole argument was, wait a minute, bare knuckle's not more dangerous than regular boxing or MMA. We think it's actually safer. There's less concussions. So now the studies have shown that there's more lacerations, cuts in bare knuckle. But the concussions are way down. Even the hand injuries, believe it or not, are down as compared to boxing and MMA. So our argument was, no, we want to do 3-minute rounds. We want to do 3-minute rounds. We want to do 3-minute rounds. Wyoming then said, okay, you know what? We agree. It's not more dangerous than boxing. You can do 3-minute rounds. So then we said, all right, we'll do 5 threes for our regular fights. And then, you know, the championship rounds, when there's a championship fight, we do 7. Now, for the women, we do 2-minute rounds. That was it. The whole argument is, why are you reducing the number of rounds if we're as safe or safer than boxing? You know, we should be at least 3-minute rounds. I wouldn't do 5-minute rounds now that, you know, the initial and the learning process, I wouldn't go back to the 1 10-minute rounds. You know, maybe like a special one-off event like you used to see before, cage matches and stuff like that, or, you know, somewhere that would sanction it, but not our regular day-to-day, daily or monthly events. I'm happy with the 5-3 and the extra 2 championship rounds.
Talking about special events, you actually had slap fighting on before your shows before.
We did. We had in one of our shows, it wasn't a regular BYB numbered show. It was actually just, it was called BYB US versus Russia. We had Russian partners that came to us in 2021 at the beginning of the year, and they wanted to do a bare knuckle fight with Sergey Karatonov and James McSweeney and a few other people. They want to bring some Russians down, and they do slap fighting in Russia, but they wanted to get into the bare knuckle. So we were organizing an event, and then they asked me, do you think you can get a couple slaps approved before the bare knuckle fights? So I talked to the Florida Boxing Commission, and I explained my position as far as, hey, I agree that this is new. It's kind of stupid, but it could be entertaining, you know, but we won't know unless we do it, you know. So how can we do this? You know, I don't think the fighters, the slap guys need to be like blood work or anything like that, because there's not going to be any blood. But yeah, eye exam, you know, should they wear a mouthpiece? Yeah, I think so. They should wear a mouthpiece. Mouthpiece will help with concussions, by the way. I don't think these other leagues are doing mouthpieces. I think they should have a mouthpiece because a lot of these people are abusing the slap, and they're actually using, and you can see it in some of the videos, they're leading with the palm, with the wrist and the palm. And now it was interesting. The crowd there enjoyed it because it was like, you know, wow, something you hadn't seen before. But I said it as soon as it was proposed, I wouldn't do it. So I'd rather get in the Trigon against somebody than where I know I can have a little defense, maybe, where I can trade punches. But in the slap fight, really, sometimes whoever wins the coin toss wins the fight, you know, especially when they're leading with the wrist and not using mouthpieces and all that. And I said, somebody's going to get hurt. I don't agree. And I think it's ridiculous that the Nevada Commission has approved that, yet not wanted to approve bare-knuckle fighting. When there's a lot of history now of bare-knuckle fighting, there's science behind it. And that's just stupid. But sometimes it's who you know, not what you know. And, you know, they like to keep the UFC around, I'm sure. And they made that miraculous approval happen almost overnight. So, I mean, I don't know. I honestly, a couple of weeks ago, I thought they were going to shut that down, at least the slap fight version or the power slap, whatever that's called, with all that going on. I figured they can't keep this going with, you know, it's just going to be bad press after bad press. But, you know, alpha males, you know, they don't care. They're going to roll right through it. And that's what he's done. He's rolled right through it. But I don't see it. When what's his kid? Logan Paul. Mm-hmm. Logan Paul started one with Schwarzenegger and all that. When he started that, and I heard that Dana White was going to start his, I just said, why? Why? You have the number one combat platform in the world, and you're going to do this? I kind of saw it like as an ego or a vanity project. You know, like, oh, you're going to do this? I'm going to show you I can do it bigger and better. And I just think it's silly. I think somebody's going to get hurt. I know somebody already has gotten hurt. I heard somebody in Poland had a serious injury doing this. I don't like not having defense. As a matter of fact, I think in combat sports somewhere, it says that a fighter must be able to defend himself at all times. How do you defend yourself when you're hanging your chin over a table, letting somebody, you know, it just doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense to me.
There's astronomical numbers in Russia, doesn't it?
It started in Russia right before COVID. And because there was no other sports going on, right? It became popular over here, just like, you know, cornhole. You got cornhole. I'm watching cornhole on ESPN. I'm going, how can you cornhole land on ESPN and bare knuckle boxing is frowned upon, you know, or you know, darts. I know that's big, you know, darts, you know, it's like, yeah, I'm like, wow. But, you know, again, sometimes it's who you know, not what you know.
So, mate, looking at the other states that you're trying to get into, you know, how many are you legal in currently? Which ones are you working on? What chance do you think you're going to get of getting legalized in Nevada and California?
Okay, we are currently legal. Bare knuckle is currently legal, of course, in Wyoming, Florida. I'm going to try to remember the order as it. Florida, Mississippi. Then there's, I believe, on reservation, anywhere in the United States where there's a Native American reservation, that hasn't signed a compliance act with the Boxing Commission, right? Which basically gives up their sovereignty in that. So those are nationwide, but, South Carolina just had it. Virginia just passed it. We'll be going there. Louisiana has done it. Colorado has done it. Then in Nebraska, Kansas, I'm probably missing a few. But it's starting to roll, right? People are seeing that the events are safe, that people are having a good time, that the promotions are growing in fan base and in the quality of fighter, right? Because as we've grown, we've been able to attract more, you know, boxers and MMA guys, experienced guys. So I think it's always going to continue to grow. Now, there's always going to be a handful of states which will be the last ones to drop, just like it happened in MMA. And it's because, you know, boxing has been the big fish, you know, or in the little pond for a long time. When MMA came out, boxing promoters did their best to shut MMA down. I guarantee you they were paying John McCain's campaign money to go after the UFC like he did. I guarantee you they were, you know, going and padding those boxing commissions and making sure that they didn't allow MMA. The fans spoke, however, right? The fans said, no, we're interested in this. The numbers proved, and I give it to Dana and all the previous people that were at UFC previous that stuck with it, right? They didn't give up. They stuck with it, and they are where they are today because of that. But so boxing tried to kill MMA, and now they're both strong, right? Well, MMA is stronger than boxing, but they're both up there. And here comes the redheaded stepchild of bare knuckle boxing, right? So now we got two powerful entities trying to stop bare knuckle fighting from getting approved in all states. Now, of course, the states where they have no events, they're going to flip to allowing bare knuckle boxing, right? Because they're like, you got no leverage on me. You know, I'm in Louisiana. You're not having any UFC events in Louisiana. So why do I care what you think, you know, or whatever. So those are the states, like Florida really didn't have, like, the UFC came here years ago. They never came back until COVID, and they only came because, you know, the Florida was open, right? And, you know, they had success. So they've come back, and now they tested the waters, I think, in Orlando not too long ago. I'm not sure how successful that one was. But the states where they do have their events, right, the Nevadas, the, you know, Californias, or where big boxing events happen, the Texas, those in the New York, those will be the last four dominoes to drop. But I do see it expanding. Of course, it's legal in several countries now. We're working with a few other countries. Our goal really is to, like we've done the United States. We've gone as west as Wyoming. We've gone into the Carolinas, into the Bayou, Mississippi, and Florida. We've gone to London, you know, an 8-hour flight, you know, and now we've gone 15 hours to Dubai, you know, and our goal really is to cover the globe. So we're also looking for other countries that we're working with, you know, but we'll be announcing soon. We'll be back in London this year. We'll be announcing that date soon, and some new areas for us, and some new projects as well. So there's always something going on, unfortunately.
So what is the process? So say you apply to Nevada, do you have to put some type of packet together? And then if they reject it, can you appeal? And if that's rejected, like, do you have to wait a year to apply again? What is the process?
It depends on the state. Some states it has to happen with legislation, right? Like a state like Arizona, for example, has to be written into the legislation. So the state Congress, House of Representatives has to vote on it. So then you have to lobby the Boxing Commission to get behind you, and then they present it to the legislature, and then it has to be voted. Other states, it doesn't have to work that way. Like Florida, actually, the rule was that you had to wear a glove. That was the rule in Florida. Now, it didn't say that the glove had to cover your knuckles. So the minimum glove was 4 ounces. So we came up with the glove that we use and make available to our fighters, which basically comes to about an inch of your wrist, and it is 4 ounces. And Florida says, yeah, technically you fit the bill. Now, because we've had several successful fights and everything, now the state actually went to the legislature and asked them to remove that clause of having to wear a glove and to allow specifically bare knuckle. And that's happened. So now in Florida, we don't even have to wear the glove. But it really, it depends on the state here. It's a state-by-state basis. But, I mean, first step is to sit down with the commission and ask them. I said, do you think a bare knuckle punch is more dangerous than a hit with your elbow, a knee, or a kick to your face? And their answer will always be no. So and the follow-up is, so why is bare knuckle not legal? Why is bare knuckle not legal? If you're telling me right now that you agree with me that an elbow comes with much more force and more density than a fist will, a knee comes with much more force and density than a fist will, and a kick with the momentum that you can come around, why is it not legal? So that's the first step. You'll get some people that'll just tell you flat out, over my dead body, you know, some commissions. It's like, well, okay, you know, I got time. we'll wait it out. We got some other states to play in. You might not be here forever. I agree. So, you know, but we hope, you know, that in time they see that we do well match fights. We don't set guys up to be knocked out, right? We don't put an 11-0 guy against a 1-11 guy to get that sensational knockout for the reels, for the video clips, so it can go viral and all that. So the commissions, once they actually work with us or they see or they come, like we've had several commissions that we've invited to come to our events to see, to speak to the Florida commission and or the Wyoming or the South Carolina or the Mississippi commission, who has had experience with us, to come and see the fights, to see our matches and whatnot. And so we're very active on that. And I this last year, I gave the CEO duties to Greg Bloom, who was part of the original Combate Global MMA series, who's owned by Robert McLaren, and who started UFC. And so he's been very active in expanding that and working with commissions. He was one of the tip of the spear really in South Carolina in getting that approved and getting that event done, and working with Virginia. We'll be announcing an event there soon as well. So he's been very helpful to me because I ran out of hours in the day, and I didn't want me to be the reason that we couldn't move forward or grow as fast as potential. I apologize. I'm getting so since Greg came on board, he's been really working with the states. I've been transitioning some of the stuff to him, that, you know, the communications with the commissions and whatnot. I'm still of course involved, and I've been focusing more with the production team around the event planning itself and whatnot. I've given a lot of that to Greg to move forward with.
And you also did like a collaboration and affiliation with BKB in the UK. So just tell us about how that came about.
Yeah, I've always seen them. I never had an opportunity to meet them. You know, Jim and Joe. And forgot how during COVID, you know, on Messenger, I don't remember how it came to be, but we just started communicating and just, hey, you know, like what you're doing, you know, we're doing this, you're doing that, you know, and then during COVID, when it was just a real big lull and, the UK was kind of closed down, and Florida was open, I said, hey, why don't you send me a couple of your fighters, you know, and send me a couple of your fighters and we'll put a couple of your fighters in all our shows. And, you know, we'd like, I don't think this is very typical in promotions, right? And where this happens. So it caught a lot of people by surprise. But I always say teamwork makes the dream work, right? And I've always said there's room in combat sports in every kind of category for more than just one company. I mean, it's silly for somebody to think that it's only them, right? So I like working with people. I it comes from the NASCAR, you know, the teamwork mentality. So I got along real well with those guys. I said, send me a couple of your guys. They sent me Barry Jones and I forgot the other young man's name. But anyways, they sent them over. They had great fights. And then COVID got restrictions lifted in the UK. And when they were going to have their first event, you know, they asked me for a couple of our fighters, and we just said, hey, let's just keep this going. Let's just, each one of our shows, we'll have a spot for one of your fighters. Each one of your shows have a spot for one of our fighters, and our fans will interact. Sure, there'll be rivalries, you know, as far as the fan bases. The UK fans love it when the you know, their guy wins. The US fans love it when their guy wins. But the respect that they're all given, when an American wins over there, they're given respect. When the UK guys win over here, they're given respect, because at the end of the day, it's a gentleman's sport, right? It really is a gentleman's sport. And it's nice to see, you know, it's nice to see. And then that extended with, you know, hey, would you like to have an event here in the UK? We'll set you up here at our venue in one of our off months. Said we'd love to. And when you guys want to come to the US, we'll set you up. You tell me what city, state, we'll put our resources to work for you. And it's been a great relationship. You know, Joe Brown and Jim, they've been great guys. We enjoy literally the same thing. Sit down, talk, whether it's business, our other businesses, or football, you know, or soccer, whatever it is. I should say soccer. They don't talk football. They talk their football, our soccer. But just great guys. Been around the families, you know. As a matter of fact, now in May and March, Joe was inviting me to spend a few days down in southern England where he lives, you know, and just good people. Surround yourself with good people.
After speaking with you and speaking with Mel, I think it's fair to say that BYB focuses on talent over bringing in like an ex-boxer or an MMA fighter that's maybe over the hill, that's just looking to kind of sell his name.
You know, I respect the fighters too much. And I feel that some of these guys shouldn't be fighting anymore. And they come to us and they'll say even that they'll drop their regular rate. They just want to fight. And I don't, you know, we've actually done some other stuff for fighters. You know, hey, how about you work with us on this, or come work back at the house with us, or work, let's do podcasts, or let's, you know, try to help them in some capacity. But I don't like seeing a fighter that shouldn't be in the ring. You know, you saw, I don't want to mention any names, but anyways, we've tried, and it comes from the backyard. Like when we started, it starts with, it was hard to get fighters to begin with. So we had to go to the grassroots guys. But even then, we like the young guys that aren't getting the opportunities in other sports. They're talented. They may be, not have a big record or anything like that, but, you know, we can see the talent, we can see the heart, we give them an opportunity and they make the most of it. A lot of our fighters, I mean, wow, we brought a kid named Julio Tenori, 20-year-old kid, you know, I kind of felt bad. We were putting him against Toby Micek, you know. Toby's more of a grappler. He's still a good puncher. He was from Bellator or whatnot. But this kid, I was told, was a good boxer. So I said, well, boxing, inexperienced, young, but skillful against an experienced vet, should be a well-matched fight, right? Should be a 50-50. He's got a little bit more boxing, but he's got a little bit more, you know, real-life experience or combat sport experience. Should make for a good fight. And it was a great fight. It looked like Toby was going to, his experience was going to, was going to win the day for him. And then, you know, Julio just lit up. I mean, his heart just like pumped, you know, two extra times a second or something. And you just saw him come pour it on. And he got the knockout over the more experienced fighter. So, you know, stuff like that, just discovering guys like that, guys like JD Burns, who puts his heart in every fight, gets knocked down three times, gets back up with a smile on his face, and goes on to win the fight. You know, just good people, good, strong-hearted individuals.
How close was Shannon the Cannon Briggs ever to fighting for you?
Well, he came to one of our events, he got in the ring, and Dada interviewed him in there, and he said, I love this ring. I wish this ring was around when I was, you know, my thing. I can punch right through somebody. There's nowhere to run. So, he's a great guy, you know, the champ, you know. I wouldn't say that we weren't interested. We'd love to see him fight. But again, he's up there. And, you know, he's going to demand or require a hefty purse. And then it goes back to, what would I rather do? Would I rather sign a lot of, with that same revenue, sign younger fighters to multi-fight agreements and try to raise more guys versus just trying to get a bunch of eyeballs to see one guy fight once, you know? It just goes to that, you know, if we could ever work something out, you know, that he'd like to fight and we could put him with a well-matched fight, you know, would love to, but, you know, it would have to be something on a, you know, on a pay-per-view basis or something. We couldn't offer him, you know, six figures just to step in the ring, you know, unless Mike, the other guy across from him or something like that, you know.
Right. The pay-per-views would be crazy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
How is it for you, Mike, to watch? You know, you have guys in your organization that were, you know, so-called journeymen, so-called B-siders that have, you know, may have been a professional fighter that were like 6 and 24. They come to Bare Knuckle. They were, you know, 6 and 24 in pro boxing because they never had a promoter. They never had anyone behind them to push them. But they come to Bare Knuckle and they're A-siders, they're champions. They've got that backing and now they're, you know, doing things they only dreamed about.
Yeah, you see more of that on the MMA side, right? Because there's MMA guys that are great strikers, but you look at their record and they may be, like you said, you know, 8-12. But, you know, 8 of those losses were submissions, you know, or, you know, a decision or something like that. And, you know, decisions, we all know how judges are. So that's why we say we want the fight stand by the results, the hands of the fighters and not the judges. You know, we take that in consideration, like Toby's one, you know, or some other guys. You got Tony Lopez, right? He's a great striker. You know, he wishes he could use his feet, you know, here too, but because he's got that long leg, that long reach, you can kick your head from one side of the trigon to the other. You know, but he had fought DJ Linderman. I think he beat DJ Linderman in MMA with a head kick, if I'm not mistaken. And they fought for the championship, and DJ Linderman beat him when it was only hands. You know, so there's just, it's a lot of variables. There's a lot of talent in different things. Some guys are great grapplers. Some guys aren't. Some guys are good with their hands, not with their feet. So when they're in MMA, they don't have the best record. But you bring them into the ring where it's all even, as just hands, and they let them fly.
Isn't Tony on Power Slap?
He was. Yeah, I was surprised to see him on there. But Tony's game for anything. Tony will fight, you know, at the drop of a hat. You know, you got to love somebody like that who's as experienced as he is at the age level that he is. He's nowhere near punch drunk. He's got it right there. He's a great family man, and he brings his entire family to each one of our events. They're always there supporting him and whatnot. I love Tony. Tony's a great guy. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I was surprised to see him on there, but at the same time, I wasn't, because you know, he's one of the, he'd tell me, he goes, I'll fight every week if you have a fight for me. Every week I'll fight. You know,
he's been on the show actually. He's actually been on there.
He's
been on. He was one of the first ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Mike, great guy.
Do you ever get chance when you're at an event just to kind of like sit down and look around at what you've created?
I for those that see me during the event, I run around. They call me the chairman, but it's not of the board. I'm the chairman. I'm the guy that's moving chairs, adjusting chairs, making sure all the angles are right, that every seat, that every table is just right so they can see, get the proper view that we're looking for, so the experience that I want the fans to have. So they call me the chairman. Now, the moment the first bell rings, I'm not off, but I'm relaxed, because I know my job is to get us to that first bell. Once that first bell rings, Goldberg, Paulie, Claudia, Benny, they're all on. I mean, it's they're pros. They're on it. Big Mo, in ring announcer, he's a pro. He's on it. Our production staff, Nelson Swegler and the crew, Rob Kramer, everybody in there, they're on it. Mel Valenzuela, you know, I mean, everybody's doing what needs to be done, so I can kind of take a breath. But you'll see that I just rotate the ring, and I'm walking. I sit down, watch one round from a fight here. I move to the other side. I just make sure that everybody is they have what they need. Our guests have what they need. I mingle a little bit, but yeah, there's I'm a smoker, so I'll take a smoke break at one point between fights, and I'll pull back to one of the doors in the back, usually behind the production, and or I'll sit by the entrance, like by the concessions or something. And I just, you know, just take it all in. you know, look around, take a deep breath, put my head down and get back in there and keep, you know, circling the ring. But then after the show's over, yeah, then the Jack Daniels, the tequila, the all that starts flowing and we have a good time. But yeah, I'm usually still very active, just working the room.
As a, you know, entrepreneur in different businesses, what are your aims like for BYB in the next 3 years, 5 years, 10 years?
Well, we're working right now on several broadcast opportunities. That's really what I'd like to do is I'd like to find a good partner, right? It's like I said, a good partner. I don't want any partner. I don't want the first partner. You don't want the first girl that walks by. You want, you know, the best overall experience. And we've had, you said, we've been on YouTube for a long time because I'd rather put it on YouTube and have the masses available to watch it, even if it's costing us potential revenue, it's expanding our fan base, then do a deal with a smaller network or with somebody that's not going to be fruitful in the long term, right? Mm-hmm. So I'd say in the next short while, we should be closing something on the broadcasting side, continue to expand the countries that we can operate in and expand operate in. That's my focus. I'd love to be, you know, economies are tough right now, right? I hate to ask for a fan to pay me, you know, X amount of a month on a subscription. You know, that's why we were putting out our product on YouTube. I'd like to be on free TV as the ideal is to have our events available. Like I was able to just tune in as a kid, you know, and watch, you know, ABC Sports or whatever it was at that time. That would be my ultimate goal. If we had enough eyeballs that the networks would say, okay, well, we believe that you're worth it for us and we're gonna carry your shows and we're gonna subsidize this with advertisements, sponsorships and other opportunities, that would be the ideal. We do the pay-per-view platform as well, and there could be some commingling of that, you know, pre-play shows with a couple pay-per-view events, special features or something like that. But that's my goal really in the next couple of years, is to continue to expand our fighter base. We really believe in our female division as well. We think it's, you know, we don't have the eyeballs on us that, you know, these girls that are wearing lingerie for weigh-ins and all that are having, but I think we have, some really tough females. I know I wouldn't want to get in the ring and fight them, you know, and I'd like to continue building that in several divisions, several weight classes. You know, so that's something that I'd like to see continue as well. And I love, like I said, this kid, Julio Tenori, Miguel De La Torre, guys that find some guys that are going to surprise us. You know, it's always great when Mel finds, you know, at the end of the card, when I can look at Mel and go, wow, you know, that kid was good. You spotted him, you know, and he's proud of what he does. So it's always good to find a couple of those on every card. That's the way to keep growth.
Will we ever see a full patriotic UK v USA card?
Yes, you will. Very soon, God willing. Yes, you will, and very soon. That's something we're working on. But this year should be the year. As a matter of fact, last year we did a couple fights. Like we did, the way we did our card in London was three fights of just BKB guys. Local English guys against local English guys. Four fights of BYB guys. What was it? No, four fights of BYB guys against BKB guys. And then three fights of BYB guys against BYB guys and gals, I should say. So we didn't do the full card US against UK, but we split it up. You know, three of these, and then four US UK. Our next card will likely be a full Ryder Cup style, you know, U.S. versus U.K. or US versus UK slash Europe, because we do have the BKB guys have some fighters from Poland, and this kid Marco, who is fantastic. I forgot exactly where he's from. I'm not sure. It's not Hungary. I forgot where it is. But, you know, they have fighters from the region. So, absolutely. We're excited about that. It's going to be a good one.
One thing that helped the UFC take off was Ultimate Fighter. Obviously, you know, like a side shoulder programming. Any ideas of doing anything like that? I'm not talking it has to be a complete ripoff of the Ultimate Fighter where they all stay in a house, but something similar.
Well, I mean, they're doing that now with a... I watched 3 minutes of that Power Slap the other day. And they were, and I turned it on, and they were talking about, oh, he's got to be in the house. And I go, house? Don't tell me you guys are doing a fucking house for Slap Fight. And they're talking about these guys like they're athletes. Oh, when we train him, by the time he finishes the training, he's going to be... I turned it off. I was like, this is, I couldn't believe it. But anyways, no, we have some projects going on. It won't be that style of program. We like telling the fighter stories. We like following them through their career, telling their stories, and then showing some of their, you know, them in action, something like that. But it wouldn't be a house. Now we have something that could be a house type deal, but it nothing like the Ultimate Fighter. We like our individuality, our originality. We feel like we're the original, bare knuckle backyard thing. Of course, in the UK, it's been done for years as well with the Travelers and everything else. But in the US, it started in Dada's backyard. It started with Dada, started with Kimbo Slice. We dare to be different, you know, with our ring, with our style, with our approach, with our willingness to work with other promotions. To spread the sport, you know, it's just the best way to grow the sport. And, that's what we're doing.
One thing you touched on earlier in the interview was you announced this week, BYB, first ever bare knuckle event in the United Arab Emirates on March the 18th, Desert Brawl, which will be on pay-per-view. How did that come about, Mike? Is that something that you reached out to them to do?
Actually, a couple of years ago during COVID, our friends at Core Sports had reached out to us that they wanted to do an event here in the U.S. with Thor and Eddie Hall that were going to box. And instead of getting a promoter's license and all that, they came through somebody that worked with us mutually. Right. And they knew what type of people we were and that we do what we say what we do. And so they introduced them to us and we were going to do that fight for them. We were going to be the promoter. Mel was going to be the matchmaker. We were going to take care of the event. They were just going to bring the talent. It wasn't going to be bare knuckle. That fell apart about a month or two before the event because Eddie Hall, I think, tore his bicep. Mm. Or something happened, then they couldn't find a replacement. And they decided just to scrap it. And that was also getting closer to the end of the of this COVID shutdowns and all that. So they were going to be able to get their event done. So, but the relationship was started there at least. And they saw how willing we were to work. Matter of fact, they sent us a deposit for the event. And when the event didn't happen, we returned the deposit. And they were pretty sure they were pretty surprised that happened because in many cases, you know, people wouldn't do that. But again, we don't I don't believe in taking anything that's not mine, but I damn sure won't let anybody take anything that is mine at the same time. So it just fostered that relationship. And then as they saw us continue to grow, they asked us if we would be interested in doing something over there. We said absolutely. We started working with the commission down there, with the government and everyone. And we got the first bare knuckle license, we're excited about it. I just returned literally this morning, long flight, 15 hour flight, seemed like forever on the way back. Way there was exciting. The way back, I couldn't wait for it to be over, but, we'll be back there in a couple weeks in March. We'll have our fighters show up like they do in the UK. We get them there 2 or 3 days, earlier than we normally would, so they can acclimate to the thing, so they can take a day also to enjoy the city. And then after the fight, we also let them stay a day or two in the city, so they can, same thing, relax, enjoy the city, heal up. We don't want anybody getting on a plane, you know, and it's uncomfortable, especially after a long fight. Get on a long flight, it's definitely not comfortable. So we're excited about that. We like our fighters to, you know, of course, to behave in the city, and they're all pros. Have a good time and enjoy the experience as well.
All the same rules and regulations, Mike, and I'm sure anybody that's listening will want to know, can they drink alcohol there?
Yes, you can drink alcohol there. Yeah, it's there's bars and restaurants, and you can smoke indoors. You know, I was having dinner the other night, and the guy I was having dinner with asked for an ashtray, and I looked at him and said, we could smoke in the steakhouse? He's like, yeah. Fantastic. You know, I felt like I went back 20 years in time, 10 years in time. it's a great culture. It's beautiful architecture, beautiful infrastructure. I learned a lot while I was there, as far as the countries that populate the city, right? I mean, the local population is probably, you know, 10 or 15% of the overall population. There's a lot of people from India and Pakistan, businessmen and women, all expatriates from the UK, Ireland, Australia, the US. I saw people from all over the world. You know, it was very interesting. You know, little to no crime. I didn't see a police car running around. Everybody, very orderly, very, very nice. I really enjoyed it was humid, though. That was a surprise to me. I thought I was going to the desert, but it was very humid while I was there. But beautiful city, the architecture, the world's tallest building for now, because they're building a building 100 stories more than that one. It's under construction, so it never ends.
Is this going to be a one-off or a yearly thing?
No, I mean, I like doing two shows a year per city that we go to. That's the ideal. We can time them, you know, 5 to 7 months apart, because if you've been to a BYB show, you have a great time, you don't want to wait a whole year to see another one, and we can't be there every month either, but you know, 5 or 6 months, going twice a year gives you a chance to get together with your buddies or your coworkers or whatever, and make an event out of it. So we hope to be back to Dubai, I don't know about this year, but probably early next year, if not maybe later this year as well, you know. So but absolutely, just like London, we were there in October. We'll be there first half of this year.
Well, Mike, one question I always like to finish the show on is, what advice would you give somebody that's, you know, is young, wants to be an entrepreneur like themselves? What life advice would you give them?
Don't be afraid to take risk. Don't be afraid to fail. A lot of people don't do something because they think, I don't know if I'm good enough. I don't think I'm capable of doing it. I don't know. They don't trust in themselves. As a young guy, I remember I took some deals to the point of closing, and then I passed it on to my boss for the final closing, right? And only to have them screw it up. And I said, never again, never again. I'm going to take it to the end. If anybody's going to screw up, it's going to be me. And if I screw up, admit to it. You know, I hate anybody that comes with excuses. If I tell somebody, hey, listen, this is what needs to be done. You did it this way. Da, da, da. But I, no, don't, no excuses. I learned from mentors the same way. Hey, you want to be respected? You acknowledge when you make a mistake. Acknowledge it, own it, and don't repeat it. Learn from it, you know? But if you start making excuses and, you know, or getting mad at your boss or your mentor, whoever it is, because he pointed out that you screwed up, that's, you're not going to get too far, you know, that way, you know? So, you know, and also, you know, as an entrepreneur, you got to know that, you know, there's two types of people in the world, right? You want to work 9 to 5 and punch your clock and just disconnect and be happy with that. And there's no shame or problem at all. Is that at all, you know? And then there's the people that are willing to work 80 hours a week or 100 hours a week if necessary to not have a boss, right? To take that gamble to be a little more successful than I would have wise been, because every job has a ceiling, right? At every company, at every job, you get to the point that even if you've been there 30 years, that's why a lot of times you say, oh, I've been in this company 20 years and they're getting rid of me for a new guy. Well, yeah, because you hit the payroll ceiling and you keep asking for a raise. And meanwhile, there's somebody out there that's able to do your job, start new and start at the half of what you're making. So, you know, if you want to make more than the ceiling of your job, you need to find, you know, another job or another trade or another skill set, or take a gamble, save your money and start something, you know, believe in yourself that you can do it. And everybody has self-doubt, everybody. Yeah, I don't care who you are, Bill Gates, Zuckerberg, they've all had self-doubt. They've overcome it, I'm sure. Now their ego's bigger than the universe. But at a certain moment, you know, everybody doubts themselves and their capabilities. It's those guys that are saying, you know what, I want to test myself. You know, I want to, same thing with a fighter. You know, the guy that you'll never know if you're championship material unless you fight championship caliber fighters. You know, if you don't, oh, no, I don't want that guy. He's going to kick my ass. Oh, then you're not going to get too far, you know, that way either. So that's pretty much it. Don't be afraid to take risk, you know, because with risk comes reward.
Well, thanks again, Mike. Great advice. I thought, to be honest, I like listening to that. If you can tell everybody where they can find you, what you've got coming up, the social media handles for yourself and BYB.
Yeah, BYB pretty much on everything, on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. It's BYB Extreme, or, you know, hashtag at BYB Extreme. Our YouTube channel is also BYB Extreme. If I tell fans to get on and subscribe, of course it's free to subscribe, but you'll get all our notices. You'll get all our fights when we release them, the individual fights, some programming that we do with Erin Tohill, world-class female boxer that fought for us a couple times and now has taken over her podcast duties, and just a great person. You know, so that's all on our YouTube channel as well. You'll never see me on one of our broadcasts. I'm not the guy that says, and hear a word from our president. You know, it's not about me. You know, it's not about me. It's about the fighters. It's about the action. People at home don't care. When I see other promoters get on there on the TV, I'm like, oh, they're just stroking their ego there. You know, that's all they're doing. So it's not about me. So, I mean, I'm active on social media, but, most of the time, I'm talking about current events and other stuff. I tend to be a little combative is not the word, but I'll talk about things that need to be talked about that some people are scared to talk about or don't want to talk about or are afraid, you know, what people will think about them if they talk about. So if you want to follow me on social media, on Instagram, I'm BYB, and Facebook, it's just Mike Vasquez, VAZQUEZ. But depending on your views, you may want to unfollow me quickly as well.
And we are at TLRMMA on Instagram and Twitter. And catch us next time. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Last Round MMA Podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes and interviews. In the meantime, follow The Last Round MMA on Twitter and Instagram at TLRMMA.